Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College. Brought to you by Wilson, proud to be the official basketball of NCAA March Madness. Shop the official NCAA game ball on Wilson.com. Now, here's your host, Tim Doyle.
Welcome back to another episode of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Tim Doyle, alongside South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. You weren't just a high school coach. You weren't just coaching varsity. You were coaching JV basketball. Mm-hmm. Now multiple stops at Division I schools, head coach of South Carolina. When you were getting ready for JV basketball practice, could you ever imagine you'd be sitting in this seat?
Never. You know, Tim, all I ever wanted to do was coach at my high school, at Miami Senior High. I was the JV coach there. I graduated in 83. I went back in 85, and I started coaching the JV team there, and I did it for 9 years. And that's all my dream was. You know, some guys aspire to be the head coach at university, whatever, or for the Philadelphia 76ers or whatever. I just wanted to coach at our high school. That's all I ever wanted to do, and that's all I ever got out of bed back then hoping to do.
Then where'd you get the itch then? When do you kind of start making that transition? Because then you become a varsity coach, obviously coach some great players, guys like Steve Blake, Udonis Haslam's like 106, still playing in the NBA. I mean, you had some like quality, big time players, but when did you start getting that itch?
Well, my high school coach, Shaky Rodriguez, is the guy that kind of elevated South Florida high school basketball onto a national scene. And I was working for him while that was going on. He was my high school coach, and I went back to work for him. And then when he left, I took over. And through him, he just passed away. Through him, I was able to meet so many college coaches. And then he made the jump from high school coach to head Division I coach at Florida International. And just seeing his path, the more people I met, you know, I had some coaches, college guys, that is, have come in to recruit, and they'd say, Frank, you ever thought about, coaching college basketball? And, we were just talking earlier, working camps nationwide, whether it was five-star or the ABCDs or the Nike camps, you get to know people. I don't know if I got the itch to get into college, Tim, as much as I was starting to get disappointed in where public education was going. And my role as a school teacher was not what it was when I started. So it was a little bit of both, man. I was ready for a new opportunity because I was getting burnt out from some of the challenges that public school teachers face.
So then you go and coach with Bob Huggins. Now you and Huggy on the sidelines. I'm a big WWF guy. Now it's called WWE. I mean, what a tag team. I mean, you're talking about like Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine. I mean, you got some intimidating folks there on the sidelines. What did you take most there from Coach Huggins coaching alongside?
Yeah, and now throw Andy Kennedy into that mix. That was the trifecta. It was unbelievable. AK actually puts videos of Generation X and puts our faces, me into Razor Ramon, Hugs into Diesel, and himself as the X-Pac. But it was unbelievable, man. That was an incredible experience. People laugh because they say, Frank, you used to like be the quiet guy on the sideline. I said, well, that was my role. That's what I was supposed to do. You know, can you imagine players if me, AK, and Hugs are relentlessly on them every single day? I mean, basketball would end. it was great, great time. He and I had become friends before he hired me for years, and we actually had formed a real good friendship before he hired me. He was actually suspended in his DUI during his DUI situation when he hired me, which meant even more to me. He's become, you know, that, you know, we, you go through life And some people you grow up with and you never speak to again, and others you meet as you're going through life and they become actual brothers. And Hugs has become like a big brother to me. It's unbelievable how lucky I am to have someone like him in my life.
You know, you talk about being that quote unquote good cop, bad cop. You know, those are conversations like my wife and I have, because I have a 6-year-old and 3-year-old. And, you know, my wife is definitely more the nurturing one, and I have to be the bad cop, which is kind of fun in a way. Like, I walk out of the room, I'm like laughing to myself. Did Hugs have to do that with you guys? Did he have to sit you down and be like, all right, they're going to look at me like I'm the, you know what, I need you guys to pick them up after I chew them out? Or did you guys just kind of dance around and everyone fell into their role? Or was it really assigned to you?
No, that's what's great about Hugs. He lets you be who you are. He doesn't tell you, you have to be this way or you have to do this. He tells you what he wants done. And then he lets you be who you are and do the job however you feel comfortable doing it. I when I got hired at Cincinnati, I was the third guy, and it wasn't my place to come in and start dropping my voice in a place that already had success in leadership. Then when we all went to K-State, then I became AK got Ole Miss, Andy Kennedy, that is, the same year. So, and I became Hugs' top guy. So then my voice became louder and more involved in some of the stuff that I didn't do before. But no, he's tremendous. He allows you. And I've learned that my high school coach is the same way. When I was his JV coach and his assistant, he allowed me to be who I am. Hugs is the same way. And it's the way I manage my staff now as a head coach.
Well, your personality is legendary on the sidelines, and we just type your name in and just the images, we could get facial expressions, that memes galore. You were memeing before memes were popular, but when you talk to your players, they see a different side to you. Are you okay that your perception is one thing and the reality is something else?
If people don't know me, want to judge me based on 6 seconds, good for them. Have at it. Do what you got to do. I'm more into real relationships and who I am for the rest of the day, other than those 6 seconds that they might see on the sideline for a moment. Life's too short to be upset, to be uptight, to be angry. Most of the day I spend it in laughing and joking and getting to know people and understanding people so I can better help them. You don't get in coaching and stay in coaching for the wins and losses. If you do, your career is short. You stay in it because of people. And if you're in it because of people, then you want to make sure that you can help people. And that's at least my approach, the way I see it, the way I view it, the way I try to do it. At the end of the day, hey, Tim, at the end of the day, you're a competitor. I'm a competitor. When there's guys on the other team playing against us, I want to win, man, and I don't like losing. It is what it is. But when the game's over, I really don't care when people sit down and say, well, he's won this many and lost that many. That, to me, has never been relevant. I know this. Whenever my time in coaching is over, I'm going to have an army of friends, army of people that have my back, and that's because of the real relationships that I've been able to create during my time in coaching with those young people.
Just a few things off of your comments. My wife used to come and watch me play in beer leagues, men's league games after I had finished playing at Northwestern. And she goes, I got to stop coming to these games because when you get in between the lines, there's something wrong with you. And I'm embarrassed that I'm here with you. With those beer league games, there's like 3 people in the stands, like one person's clapping. Like that was her. And she's like, I can't come. She's like, you're diving on loose balls. You're starting fights. She's like, I can't come to those games anymore. But the wins and losses gets me into a funny story. Pat Kennedy, the old Florida State coach.
Oh, yeah.
His son was my roommate 4 years at Northwestern. And he tells this great story about Pat had a team in New York and he goes into Archbishop Molloy, which had Jack Curran, very famous high school coach. And they're sitting in a room together and Coach Curran and Coach Kennedy, and Coach Kennedy goes, what's it been about all these years? And he kind of echoed similar statements of you. It's all been about the kids. It's never been about the wins and losses. And Coach Curran, if you don't know, look up the stats. Coach Kenny Anderson, one of the great coaches in the history of high school basketball. And they had this really like poignant moment there in the office. And when they walk outside of Coach Curran's office at Archbishop Molloy in Queens, above his door, he used to have a turnstile of every time he got a win, he would go like 911, 912, not only for basketball, but for baseball too. So Coach Kennedy goes, you know, was it really about the kids? You got your wins up here above the door. But but that's a story that always relates to me, especially growing up on the East Coast. And another story that related to me is my oldest son is physically handicapped and recently had open heart surgery August 31st. And, you know, it was a 50-50 jump ball type of deal. He's come through and he's doing great. But your story personally touched me. And, you know, there became a lot of prayers. I'm old school Irish Catholic. I still go to church on Sunday. And you had a moment that I wish I could explain, but I think it would take about 8 minutes. But talk about how you kind of had an encounter of a near life, near death experience.
Yeah. You know, Tim, I come from a Catholic family, a very faith oriented. I don't speak about faith very often because it's just not the way I approach it. But as I've gone through my journey, my faith has only gotten stronger and bigger and more powerful. And I don't overreact to things anymore the way I used to when I was younger. Basically, the one shining moment that's made me understand that is that moment you're talking about. I was on a bed in a hospital in Manhattan, Kansas, and my body temperature was 104. I had tubes in every orifice, and long story short, they couldn't figure out what was wrong. They had me on morphine. They couldn't get my body temperature down, and it was about 1:30 in the morning, and my wife was outside the room. My uncle, who's the most faithful person in my family, was in the room with me. And a little Asian nurse kind of approached my wife and said, "Is everything okay inside?" And she said, "Well, my husband's not doing well." She said, "Can I go inside?" And my wife says, "Sure." So the little Asian nurse walks inside and says to my uncle, "Father, is everything okay?" And my uncle said, "I'm not the father, I'm his uncle." And she said, "For right now, you'll be the father." And she says, "Let's pray." And she put her hand on my forehead and held his hand and started praying. And my uncle, to this day, can't finish the story. He says he felt this heat coming into his hand. And I was out. I was basically not in a coma, but I was out. I was drugged up. I had no idea what was going on. And about 4 a.m., so she finishes, and she looked at my uncle, and she said, "Everything's going to be okay." And she looked at my wife, and she said, "Just keep praying. It's okay." And she left. And at 4 a.m., they came in to check my temperature, 97.6, gone. And so my uncle said, "Wow, can someone find the nurse that came and helped us, that prayed with us?" And they said, "Who are you talking about?" Manhattan, Kansas is a town of 40,000 people. There's one hospital. Everyone knows everybody. And he described her, and they're like, "We don't have anyone at this hospital that resembles that." And I'm getting chills here telling you the story. And doctors came in later on, temperature down. It's pancreatitis. And so we finally figured out, this was on day 3.
Wow.
We finally figured out what was wrong. And from that day forward, everything's been great. And, you know, I used to, you know, we're laughing and joking before about Bob Huggins and me, and I drink some cold beer in my day now. I've never had another.
That makes two of us, Coach. Well, yeah, that makes two of us. Yeah. With a name like Doyle. Yeah. Come on. You know where I grew up. Yeah.
I kind of figured you'd like a cold beer every once in a while. But it's, I've never had another beer. I've never had a sip of whiskey or anything, or wine, nothing. Since that day, it's, you know, you go through that moment and they let you come back. The good Lord says, "It's Frank, it's not time. You got some other stuff you got to take care of." And I had young children at the time. And I was like, "It's all right. I don't pancreatitis. Number one trigger for pancreatitis is alcohol. Don't need it. I'm good. I want to be a father to my kids." And, but that was a powerful moment in my life. And, you know, it's a moment that, you know, I had stopped going to church, and the person that got me to start going to church again was my wife. And the person of strong, unbelievable faith in my family is my uncle. don't you think it's unbelievable that those are the two people that are in the room when I go through my moment? So it's powerful stuff.
I appreciate you sharing that story. My son likes to fish. Now, I grew up in Queens, New York, so there wasn't a whole lot of fishing going on. But the day before his surgery, we had gone down to where he likes to fish. Now, Coach, I don't like taking the fish off the hook. I wear like gardening gloves because it makes me nervous. Shot free throws in front of 20,000 people. I can't get a little fish off a hook. And the day before his surgery, we had gone down there to go fishing. And in my town, a couple of benches and stuff. And I mean, right in bird's eye view, two nuns, not only nuns, but dressed in the full habit. I'm talking about 4 o'clock on a Sunday, just sitting on a bench. So I wasn't going to go over to them, but I was going back to get the pliers because a fish got caught in the hook and I couldn't just rip it out. I had to go get pliers. So I'm walking back to my car and I see the nuns and I talk to them like they're foreign. You know, when you do, I don't know if that's just me, but I said, I'm sorry, are you from the United States? And they're like, yeah, we're from the South Side. So I said, would you mind coming over and, saying a prayer? They said, we would be happy to. And we had a really powerful moment with two nuns dressed in full habit. You get the fishing pole there right by the lake. And he ended up pulling through. So yeah, I go to church every Sunday and I'm old school in that way. And my friends, we all went to Catholic high school and stuff. They bust my chops. They go, I can't believe you still go to church. I say, I go to church just in case the guy upstairs is keeping score. He'd be like, Doyle was kind of an asshole here and there, but man, he went to church a lot. So that's why I go to church to have that moment with God,
Hey, and now that Coach Curran's up there with him, he might have that little kind of ticker above his door up there. Keeping score, see how many times you and I have been there.
You don't know if he's got like what the umpire used to have, balls and strikes. Like, yeah, that guy goes to church a lot, that Doyle guy. I don't know. Can you see my sign here in the background? Can you read that?
Yeah, it says Northwestern Basketball, and then I really can't see that next thing.
Okay, I'll read it for you, all right? It says, Tim, best hair in the Big Ten, Doyle. Okay, so this sign was on every bus, every train my senior year at Northwestern. So that just shows you how bad we were that we had to market my freaking hair for crying out loud. So I think of all the people who's going to ask you this question, I think I got the freaking credibility because I was on every bus in Chicago, every bus in the suburbs talking about hair. Now, Brian Urlacher is a very famous linebacker for the Bears. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He did the opposite of what you did. He went from bald to a full head of hair. You had some amazing salad, put some gel in it, slick it back. Now, all of a sudden, you're Brian Urlacher. What's the change been like?
I picked the wrong season of the year to go bald, too. I'm dealing with having a bald head during winter for the first time in my life. Thank God I'm in South Carolina, not in Chicago right now. I tested positive for COVID back in May.
Yeah.
And I really didn't have symptoms. But as when we got away from May, then I had knee replacement in June. And then I don't know, I've read that one of the biggest after effects of COVID is alopecia. And as the summer kept going between, I guess, that and stress of how do we do this and how do we handle this and my family, my mother who's by herself in Miami, shacked up in her house and, and it's hard to get to her and she won't travel. And so my wife's family, who's, by the way, my wife is a Jamaica high school graduate. So she's from Queens and getting back to fishing in Queens, the only fishing that took place in Queens was when you went swimming with the fish.
I knew some of those guys as well. Yeah.
But it started.
How's it? Has it been, you get more negative or more positive feedback with the head?
Everything's been positive right now. I think some people look at me like I've had people reach out like, Frank, you okay? Are you sick?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, man, it's all good. I started having all these bald spots. And Tim, this is what I'm everyone that knows me knows that whenever stuff comes out of my mouth, I try very hard to make sure I keep my word. And I said a long time ago, I'm not going to be one of these guys that holds on and kind of patches over and across and to try and hide. And when I started seeing all these bald spots from the alopecia, I said, man, I can't deal with this. So I cut it really, really short, but you still could see the bald spots. And I said, I'm done. Yeah. I'm not hiding this. And I said, if I'm going in, I'm going all in. I'm not going halfway in. And I miss my hair though. I really.
Here's the deal. I don't want to jump to conclusions because he might come on the show. Buzz Williams did something. You know what I mean? I think it looks pretty good, right? Urlacher, he did something. I don't want to name other names, but Matthew McConaughey, Ben Affleck, I can go on and on. Like, you make tons of money now, Coach. Like, you can go get yourself some real hair. Like, I'm always amazed. We could put people on the moon for crying out loud, but we can't grow a little salad up top. It's getting better. Is that something you may look at?
No, this is the bad part. You know, I lose the hair here.
Yeah.
But the hair on my ears and my nose keep getting bigger. I'm like, come on, man. I'm going to lose hair. Get rid of it on my ears and my nose. Why am I trimming my ear and nose hair and I got no hair on my head? It makes no sense.
You go to the Final Four in 2017. We talked about your journey a little bit. Is that the highlight of your coaching career?
I don't know if it's the highlight.
Then what is? Like, because the coaches we've had on here, we had Roy Williams, we had Chris Mooney, a plethora of others. And, you know, as a player, I played for Mike Jarvis and Bill Carmody, two totally different personalities. You know, does it mean more for the effect that you've had on these kids? Like, I remember Mike Jarvis conversations in high school. We're talking about 20 years ago. And I remember Bill Carmody 15 years ago. He would line everybody up on the bench, and I would call it a state of the union. He would go every single guy, what you're not doing well, how do you get minutes? I loved it because you knew where you stood with him. But is it more about the impact, or is it that moment that you're like, man, I was a JV coach and I made it to a Final Four?
Yeah, I, Tim, one of the more powerful moments for me was in 1996 when I came back to my high school to be the head coach, and we won a state championship, and after having, you know, I had to deal with disciplining some players, and we lost. Lost 8 games that year, which is the first time that school lost at eight games in a season in a gazillion years. We had a 100 consecutive home game winning streak that got broken that year. So we had some stuff, and then we turn around and win the state championship at the end with that same group of kids that grew up. And that's a moment that I never forget that sticks with me. When we beat Florida to go to the Final Four,
yep.
That moment, I'm not from New York, but my wife's family's from New York. My sister's lived in New York since '88. My family, when they left Cuba, they were in Newark, New Jersey forever. So that Northeast pocket of the country's always been very dear to me. I got so many friends in the basketball industry from that area. And all of a sudden, man, you win that game, and there's someone trying to yank a ball cap that's like 9 sizes too small for that big head of mine, and you're trying to walk around, and you're saying, "We're going to the Final Four."
Yeah.
And Sinatra, New York, New York, on the speaker system. Then finally, you connect with your family, and my wife's family, and my family, and it's Frank McGuire. New York City, the Mecca, Madison Square Garden. That coaching in the Final Four is a moment I'll never forget. But that moment at Madison Square Garden, because of all the connections from Frank McGuire, South Carolina, the former players, just it's Madison Square Garden, my family, the journey. It kind of all came together for me. So those two moments right there were unbelievable.
We got a couple more questions here with South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. Yeah, that was one of the reasons I went to St. John's. You know, growing up in New York, how could you pass up playing in the Garden? And now that my son is 6 years old, he asked me what kind of stats I had at St. John's. And I said I was a 30-30-30 guy. He goes, you average 30 points, 30 rebounds, 30 assists? I said, no. I said, if we were up by 30 or down by 30, I got in for like 30 seconds. I said, that's why I didn't last too long at St. John's. My stats weren't too good there. My dad played for the legendary coach Al McGuire at Belmont Abbey before he became a head coach at Marquette. While you were bouncing, did you ever think that, first of all, I got two bouncing questions because you were a bouncer and I do feel like you'd fit the role. when you were bouncing, were you drawing up plays in your head? Were you like, did you? Were you really?
Yes, because I was already coaching at the time. So, you know.
On like a cocktail napkin, or what would you be doing it on?
All of the above. In my mind, I'd get a napkin. I write notes. But there, you know, some nights are better than others. Now you know the club, you know, the atmosphere, you know, the regulars. And so, you know, there's certain nights that everything should be okay. If someone that doesn't come in on that night all of a sudden shows up, then your antennas are up. So you're like, okay, who's this character over here? What's he up to? But then there are other nights that 2 hours before your shift starts, you're at home, get ready, because you know that's the night that everyone wants to dance. And I don't mean actually go on the dance floor. So you've got to go in geeked up and ready to go for those nights. So, but yes, I'd stand, and you know, I never stood by the bar. I'd always go stand in the corner. Mm-hmm. And I'd stand in the corner, and I'd be my eyes were always on everything that was going on, but my mind was always on basketball. It was pretty unique.
Now, before I came on this show, I like to listen to some pump up music, right? But I'm old school. Like, I had Robert Palmer on before the show, just because that does it for me. Do you still put on that music that was in the club, or have you evolved? Are you listening to the kids' music so you could stay up to date, or are you still going throwback? And if you go throwback, who do you go to?
Yeah, I'm not a hater, you know, so because that's what the kids say. Oh, you're just a hater. I can't deal with this music that's all about degrading others and all this stuff and calling everyone names. And I ain't down with that. I like the old time stuff. Like the other day, you know, I've given in now. When we're like stretching and all that stuff, I let them pick what music they want to hear.
Okay.
I was tired of hearing all that kind of noise. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. So I played Sugar Hill Gang. So we're hip hop. Let's play some Sugar Hill Gang. They're looking like, what are you playing? And then I played September from back in the
day. Oh, you want first song at my wedding? Because I had black guys at my wedding. I had farmers at my wedding. Like, you play September, everybody can dance.
Everyone's happy.
Yes, everybody can dance. That was the first song at my wedding.
Yeah, and so I'll listen to that. I love Sinatra. I'm a big Sinatra guy. My strength guy is a rock and roll guy, so we'll crank AC/DC in there every once in a while. And when we're in the weight room working out, you know, sometimes he says, what do you want to listen to? And we'll listen to, you know, I listen to everything. I'm just not big on the like, we just yesterday we're working out. We played Journey the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scott Perry, is Scott or Steve Perry?
Steve Perry.
Steve Perry's unbelievable. His voice is, you know, incredible. You name it, I listen to it. But before games, and I've gotten back into the salsa music, which I grew up listening to as a kid. And then I stopped listening to it. And funny, the last club I worked on in Miami was two nights a week was salsa night. So I'd hear all this salsa music, and it kind of got reintroduced to me at that age. That was summer of 99, summer of 2000. As I've gotten older, I've gone back to my roots and started listening to a lot of Spanish music. So, but it depends what mood I'm in. I like before games, I'm trying to settle down and reflect. So
got
I
can
peace. So that's why I like Sinatra before games.
Well, you've certainly done it your way at multiple stops, whether it was JV, varsity, Kansas State, now South Carolina. Gene Cady came to my wedding, and this is when he came home. Because we all remember that thing. Whatever he had going on there, I actually know what it was. And he gave me a cash gift at my wedding. So, Coach, I'll say it right now. Thank you so much. Always give cash gifts. That's the East Coast to me. Thanks so much for tuning in for the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Coach Frank Martin of South Carolina, we thank you so much for your time. You've done it your way. It's been your life. Good luck this year on the sidelines.
Appreciate it, Tim. Thanks for having me, and keep that sign behind you, and take advantage of that as long as you can.
Hey, you could pay for it, Coach. You got the dough for it, so it might be an off-season acquisition, like some of the other people we talked about. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man.